Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is April 10th, 2015. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan has recently returned from participating in a workshop in Temecula, California at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And partially based on that experience, Susan suggested that we look at a couple of workbook lessons today. Lesson 79, which is, let me recognize the problem so it can be solved. And lesson 80, let me recognize my problems have been solved. And as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website. And on the left side of the page, you're going to see a column and there's going to be a word that says chat. If you click that link, you will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. And if you're not already a member, just hit the join button and come on in. Now, Susan is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, which are Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. She is also the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. Now, I know many of you are familiar with her, but she's incredible, and I just want to go back to those books and say, I really encourage you to read those. They are such nice little short stories and vignettes about practicing and living A Course in Miracles, and they always make me laugh. And so I think it's really worth your effort to get a hold of those books and read them. So welcome, Susan. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. What a nice introduction, CA. It's nice to be here.
Oh, well, thank you. And, I was thinking this morning on your Skype tagline, you may use it on your emails as well, but when you say partially cloudy with a chance of projection.
Just cloudy with a chance of projection.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it always makes me laugh.
Actually, that's the name of an essay that one of my essays, and I have a new book called Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness that is just becoming, it will be published, the publication date is April 18th.
Ooh, yay!
Yeah, so it is actually, it just became available for pre-order on Kindle, and but that particular essay is included, I believe, in that collection.
But, oh, nice. Well, yeah. Good timing.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that.
Well, no, when you say it's available for Kindle, will it be available as a paperback?
Yes. It's just that the publishing process at on Amazon is kind of staggered, and it's, this is a pre-order kind of thing that they do with the Kindles.
And will you tell us the title of the book one more time?
Yes, it's called Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness, which is, a condensed quote from the workbook lesson, Forgiveness is the Key to Happiness.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Thank you. Well, and do you want to tell us a little bit about your trip to Temecula? You had suggested these two lessons, so I'm assuming that the topic was related to these two.
Absolutely. So the topic was the world, a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, which was Ken's phrase, a phrase that he had coined and used quite a bit. To describe the situation in which we find ourselves here in a world of, that was made as a defense against it, that was born of the idea of separation. It was a projection of the guilt that we felt over believing the tiny idea of separation. And it's maladaptive because, it was made to try to get away with it and try to exonerate ourselves from the guilt we feel within and fill ourselves up from the outside, for the lack we feel within, but it doesn't work. And so that's why it's maladaptive, and it's a non-existent problem because it never happened. The separation never happened. So these two lessons, let me recognize the problem so it can be solved, and let me recognize my problems have been solved, were really integral. They were part of the reading list of, among others, of that was used at that week-long academy class in Temecula that was taught by Rosemarie Lasasso and Jeffrey Siebert, who were two of the teachers that worked so closely with Ken over many years at the foundation and, studying with him, working with him, and really have integrated his teachings in such an amazing way into their, you know, and also practice them in the classrooms of their own lives. So they're really speaking from the inside out and are able to speak both incredibly articulately to the metaphysical, you know, foundations of A Course in Miracles that Ken always emphasized and caught, you know, told us never to get too far away from, because this is such a unique teaching that really is leading us to complete non-duality. but they also have that, you know, ability to really at a very deep level explain what this feels like in our lives, you know, how it presents for us in our daily lives, and what the process of learning to apply this is like, you know, and both psychologically and emotionally, and it is a process. And so I just find their teaching so comforting. I mean, one thing that they always emphasize is that it's a process, and is that eventually, if we're really practicing this, which the practice is really questioning every time we're tempted to believe that there's a problem out, you know, that the cause of my whatever I'm experiencing, my pain, my upset, my annoyance, my fury, my you know, sense of feeling abandoned or betrayed, all of it, you know, whenever we believe that is coming as a result of, or I'm experiencing that as a result of someone or something outside me, the practice of forgiveness is really questioning that belief, you know, saying, wait a minute, you know, something else is going on here, and help me see, you know, I actually could see peace instead of this. So it's lesson five. I'm not upset for the reason I think, you know, this is not, you are not the problem. this situation is not the problem. And I could see peace instead of this. I could go back to my mind and look at this differently. And, you know, we always have available to us an inner teacher that can help us see things differently if we're willing to at least question our experience. And you know, as we go along, to practice this as we catch ourselves being so reactive, you know, it's a journey in really allowing the guilt in our mind over believing that we separated from our source and each other, you know, that we fragmented the one child of God into all these many seeming pieces. You know, that guilt is being undone for us, but eventually we come up against this kind of wall of resistance that the Course talks about, where it kind of dawns on us that, well, what does that mean for me? You know, this personal identity that I identify with is Susan. You know, if really we're being led to perfect oneness, that becomes a very frightening idea to us, because we don't know, you know, we it's unknown still. And
yes.
And so we come into, you know, it, and so they can speak and do speak very eloquently and movingly about the experience of resistance and how to deal with it. And how when we find ourselves coming up against that and we come to the place of recognizing finally that, you know, I am choosing this. I mean, it really kind of dawns on us that if I'm experiencing pain and I believe what the Course is saying, then on some level, I'm not choosing the specific experience and form, but I'm choosing the content of pain that I'm feeling. I'm choosing my reaction to it. And I don't want to let it go. You know, I mean, there's a part of me that just really doesn't want to let that go, because it feels like I'm letting me go.
Right.
And you know, that can be a devastating realization. And so they really are very, very helpful, and were help, and they spoke a lot at the Academy, both to the metaphysical ideas that the, you know, about the, what the world, why we've created this world of problems and why it doesn't work. Ken's famous quote of, you know, this is a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, but also on a practical level, well, you know, what, how do we, when we're at that place of recognizing, at least, you know, believing in one part of our mind that what the Course is saying, that's not really the problem, but also feeling like we don't know what the answer is, you know, we're unwilling to join with the answer. And as we begin to work with that, it kind of dawns on us that we're, you know, what we're really afraid of is the love, and we don't know how to get back to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And we don't know what real love is, you know, because everything that we're experiencing here is designed to really push love away. And so the love, you know, the special love that we as personal identities seem to, you know, that we're always seeking in the world is always about getting my personal needs met. It's not unconditional. It's always about, you know, kind of putting me first and trying to fill this lack I feel. And so, you know, it never really works. And so anyway, they really are, you know, one of the things that they talked a lot about was really saying that it's so helpful to just try to not judge ourselves when we're in that state of resistance and that we may be actually making much greater progress than we think when we're feeling that kind of stuckness that we come up against. And so to try not to judge it, to try not to indulge the self-talk that says, I'm never going to get there. And there's not enough time in the entire hologram for me to make it home.
Yes.
Those kinds of things that my ego always says. But to just, you know, to really just kind of take that out of the equation, you know, just catch ourselves when we're doing that and just kind of not follow those thoughts, but just watch them and consider the possibility that maybe a lot of healing is happening, you know, just by my willingness to say I'm not upset for the reason I think, just by my willingness to question the belief I've come an enormous way. And, you know, the end is certain. And so it's a necessary place to come to. And it's really not endless. You know, that's the ego's use of time. it really has been, the problem really has been solved at those two lessons that we're going to talk about today. And if I can just ride this out with the, at least reminding myself that symbol of love, of real love, of unconflicted love, of all-inclusive love, you know, of our true equality that Jesus, Holy Spirit represents, it really is still within us, and it's as close as our next breath, and you know, so to speak. And if we can just entertain that possibility that the love is still there, that it doesn't really mean anything that I'm afraid right now, and that I will get through this, you know, that maybe I'm actually making a lot of progress right now, that will sustain us, that's really faith. That's the faith, that's the trust that's being called for in this process. And on some level, we do hear the love that's calling beyond, you know, from outside the dream to us. That's what brought us here to the Course in the first place. And it will sustain us now. You know, the process, Ken used to say, the process that, you know, don't think that the process that led you this far, that the teacher, the inner teacher, this loving symbol of our ego-free presence that led us this far will abandon us now.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that I find that very personally helpful. And it's something that I was already working with, but was still really kind of spiraling back into that very stuck place. And so I felt like the whole week was a pep talk, you know. I was like, yes, I can do this. I can do it. Maybe something is good. Good is really happening here. And so they're so good at that, because they're speaking from their own, you know, they've gone through the darkness too. They have still have their dark times. I mean, until our ego is completely undone, we're going to have resistance, you know, and it's unrealistic to think that we won't.
Right. Well, and you know, something I've been thinking about, and I guess this will lead us right into lesson 79, but you know how things just come into your consciousness. And I've been thinking about this because I'm hearing it in my clients a lot, but I'm hearing it in myself. When I've gone back and listened to some of the shows, because I sometimes do that just because I think, oh, that was such a great interview, I just have to hear what she had to say again, or, you know, somebody on the show. What I recognize as I'm listening to myself is how often I say, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. And all of a sudden, I you know, I found myself going, is it? Is it really hard?
Right.
And that certainly is my belief system. As well as believing there's all these problems, I hear myself saying, it's really hard.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, I mean, you know, I feel like I'm challenging my clients going, you know, you've got to get rid of that kind of thinking, but am I getting rid of it in myself? And then another interesting thing, you had suggested these lessons. And so I pulled out the workbook that I have that was written by Ken Wapnick, in which he's, you know, talking about the various lessons. And something really just jumped out at me. And that is that he said, you know, in this lesson 79, Jesus is reminding us that the Holy Spirit is our link to our right mind. And why that jumped out is because I was thinking, you know, I do all this free association, I guess is what it is. But I was just thinking recently how wonderful it is that the way computers work, you know, I can upload a huge document, like I can upload a recording of this show, put it in Dropbox and send you a link.
Right.
And in this one little phrase, this one little line of characters, you can click on that and literally then at your disposal, you can have this whole recording. You can have a whole PDF document. You have access to everything. And how easy is that?
Right.
And so all of a sudden, you know, when I think of links, I tend to think of them as computer. And when I read that from Ken, you know, the Holy Spirit is your link. All of a sudden I said, you know, that is how easy it is, CA. You want to make it a problem and you want to make it a big problem and you want to keep saying how hard it is. And here it is. Here's the link. The Holy Spirit is the bridge. The Holy Spirit is the link. Click on it, you know, and see where it takes you.
Right. Well, and that's exactly when we're feeling that it's so hard. And you know, and Ken always emphasized, and the teachers at the foundation always emphasize that that's a natural process. You know, that's a natural part of the process. We're bound to think that at some point because this scares the hell out of the ego. You know, so when we're hearing that, you know, and that's the way it appears to me. I kind of hear all this very negative, very self-critical talk, you know, And so it's not that we want to cover it over. You know, we need to be honest that that's what we're feeling, but we also need to question the cause of that. And we also, you know, it is also a signal that we're trying to do it by ourselves, that we have not invited that communication link in.
Right. Because if we did, we probably wouldn't see it as being so hard.
Right. In my experience, it just even, I mean, sometimes you are writing it out because there's a delay in, you know, you believe that you've chosen and you're asking and you're going through the steps of forgiveness, but it seems like they're having no effect, you know. But if you can, during that time of, you know, sort of learned helplessness that we go through, if we can question and just remind ourselves that maybe maybe the love is really still there, and maybe I'm actually, you know, more healing is going on. I mean, because the undoing is not something I'm in charge of. That's what really scares us. And so, you know, if we can just, for me, just reminding myself that presence, work with whatever symbol, you know, works for you. For me, it's Jesus. And I just sort of try to remember that Jesus has promised us that he is so close to us, we cannot fail. And so who's more likely to be right? You know? And so that gives me enough light, you know, seeping in from outside the dream to write it out, you know, to wait. I've been through this before. I know this is part of the process. He's told us it's part of the process. And, you know, again, I'm becoming, the closer we get to choosing once and for all, the, you know, the more we're going to have experiences of terror, you know, but we're scaring our, you know, it's the ego that we're choosing and are unaware we've chosen, that's trying to scare the daylights out of us, you know, but that's just a part of our mind. And the part of our mind that knows that we're completely safe is still there, you know? And so to try to just remind ourselves of that, that's that communication,
you know, right.
Questioning, as you're saying, questioning, you know, is that really true? Because right now I have a choice right now to remind myself that the love is still there and to forgive myself for my fear, because that's all it is. And if we can recognize it as fear, you know, I mean, and respond gently and kindly and in, you know, with tenderness, the way we would to a child who's afraid, because that's what we're being in the moment, then, you know, it's not going to last. It can't stand up for very long to that tenderness. But if we continue the harshness, it can stand for quite a long time.
That's right.
You know, so don't fight ourselves, but, you know, don't try to muscle our way out of it, but to just say, okay, right now, you know, I'm really, really afraid. And I need to treat myself with tenderness. And I need to remember that the teacher of tenderness really is there, even though I'm too frightened right now to really experience that love, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm reminded, too, that, and I've had this for a few years. Do you remember Staples, the company? They used to have a logo that was easy. There was a button, and you would push it, and it would say, that was easy. They used it on their commercials, but they started selling it in their stores. And so several years ago, I bought one. And I would put it on my desk, and whenever I felt frustrated, I would hit the button, and it would go, that was easy.
Right.
And I need to get my button back out, Susan.
Well, and that's funny too, because there's a little story about that's related to the button idea, because and it came up at the Academy. Gloria, apparently, you know, back in when she was teaching, used to tell people in her classes that if I gave you a button right now that you could push and be instantly transported to heaven, would you do it? And, you know, nobody wanted to push the button, right?
Right.
she was trying to get people to see, obviously, that you know, that our resistance. We don't know what it means. And yes, we want salvation, but not today, you know? So,
right.
So as a little joke, somebody made up at the foundation one morning, had actually made a model of a huge button. and you know, and with a push me kind of thing on it. It was very cute. It was quite large, and you know, in a box that you could push, the button was sticking through. And so Rosemary, or one, I can't remember if it was Jeff or Rosemary, that you know, told us at the beginning of class that she had been gifted this, and that if anyone wanted to push it, they were going to put it out on the table in the lobby, so that, you know, feel free to push it on your way in or out. So it was very funny, and you know, there were a whole lot of us pushing it. I was just like, what the hell, you know?
Right.
But of course, it still needs our agreement in the mind, right?
Right.
Still am. But and it's not that we would disappear if we chose once and for all for the right mind. What would really happen is, you know, I mean, there is an interim step of the real world, and what would really happen is that we'd have no, you know, nothing in the world. We wouldn't be looking to the world for salvation anymore, or to try to get rid of guilt, because the guilt would be gone. And so we would be in the world, but not of it, and able to demonstrate unwaveringly, as we're learning little, you know, we get glimpses of this, and we're practicing what it's like to demonstrate this, but we would be demonstrating all the time that nothing has the power that anyone does has the power to change God's love for them or my love for them, because I'm part of God, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be extending love to victims and victimizers alike, because we wouldn't see them any differently. And on some level, we'd know that we're not here, that we're absolutely safe. And I mean, you know, ultimately we do want that, but again, we're not really ready to push that button.
That's right. And, you know, I love that idea, because you're absolutely right. I mean, what went through my mind is, well, one more trip to Hawaii, or, you know, I got to say goodbye to people, or,
right.
You know, that's it. We've got incredible resistance because we're not sure what that means.
Right. And it's usually, or it's our special relationships. You know, I want to watch my daughter, how my daughter's life turns out, and be there for her. And, you know, I want to write a book, or, you know, something. I have less and less of the ambition kind of stuff lately, but the special relationships, sure, you know.
Yeah.
Or beauty or something, you know. I've started painting. Now I want to paint, you know. So it's, yeah. we're just not ready. And that's okay. You know, there, I mean, another thing they emphasized is, you know, there is no time. That's the ego's trick too, is time is the theater the ego imagined to play out this drama, you know, and we use it against ourselves by when the ego joins the journey to tell us that there's never enough time in the hologram to get home.
Right.
So, you know, we can take the pressure off of ourselves. This isn't linear. We don't know where we are right now. We don't know where on the ladder we are. You know, this, again, this could be our greatest step forward to actually be enduring, quote unquote, this seeming dark night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so not try to, you know, we can really take some pressure off ourselves. I mean, we're the ones that are putting the pressure on, and it's unnecessary, you know, it's optional. So I really found that all of that very helpful. And still, I would have to say I'm still integrating it, because when you're there for a week in these all day classes, you know, there's just, it isn't anything different in content that you're really hearing, but you're hearing it in such, you know, you're there to hear it. You've stepped away in some sense from the world to really commit yourself to just hearing this message, these messages. And you're not multitasking like crazy like I usually am when I'm listening to Kenner.
Right.
So it's a real immersion. And so, you know, I find that it really, it works at a much deeper level than our consciousness. We're not aware of so much of our mind. I mean, most of our mind is completely submerged, you know, it's completely forgotten. We're reclaiming little bits of our right mind, but you know, most of it's still gone somewhere because we deliberately forgot it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah. It's very, very helpful. And this teaching really is, the metaphysics are so important, as Ken always said, because otherwise we completely reinvent the course and we're taking, you know, we try to bring it into the world. And, you know, again, the world is not the problem and it's not the answer. And so we must understand that this is about, is not about bodies. It's about a mind, and be willing to question our experience, which is otherwise. And, you know, to learn, to be open with true humility to learning that message through this practice. And it's really, it's the practice though, you know, and the teaching of the practice that, from people that have lived it, I think that is so reassuring and helpful on our journey.
I would agree. Yeah. So should we talk a little bit about lesson 79 in some really practical ways?
Sure. Let's try to do that.
Starting with the very first line, this is where the course seems so funny, is it starts by saying a problem cannot be solved if you do not know what it is. You know, it's like, okay, guys, we're starting at the very beginning. We're starting right at the basics. I love the logic of that.
Very logical. Yes. Jesus and Helen together were extremely logical. Right? It was Jesus's voice, but it came through a very logical mind too.
Yeah. So what are the things, the standouts about this particular lesson that really grab you?
Well, I mean, he's laying it out in the first paragraph. A problem cannot be solved if you do not know what it is. And we don't know what it is. You know, we think again that when we get up every morning, you know, we seem to be bombarded immediately by problems, and maybe we've even had a sleeping dream that seemed to be a problem for
right
us. Right. There's really no end to this when we go to sleep. So you know, we wake up and immediately we think that there's, you know, almost. I mean, it's interesting to watch yourself. See how long you can go before you think there's a problem. Are you listening to NPR while you're brushing your teeth? You know, is there a problem? Are you you're hearing a lot of problems. Are you reacting to them is the question. And if you are, then you've got a problem.
Right.
And we think the problem is what I'm hearing on the radio, you know, or I think the problem is somebody leaving the toothpaste, the cap off the toothpaste. I mean, that could be a problem for someone. I go downstairs and someone in my house has left the sink, dishes in the sink. That could be a problem. So we're immediately, you know, we have a choice in any moment to, it's not that we don't react to the problems, but to pay attention to our reactions, to remind ourselves that that's not the problem. The only problem, as he says in both lesson 79 and 80, is the problem of separation. And everything else is an outward picture of that inward condition. And the problem of separation has already been solved because it never happened.
Right. Which is a mind bender.
Is a mind bender. So ideas leave not their source. It's impossible for us to understand in the condition, as the Course says, we think we're in here in the dream, that all of this is happening in the mind. You know, it's really just, we're just kind of reviewing the all possible repercussions of this tiny net idea realized of separation, you know, of fragmenting and assuming individual identities and a whole universe of form. But the problem is already actually smiled at by our mind, by the one mind. And you know, we just haven't caught up with it yet, seemingly. So we're not asked to swallow what we can't believe, but we are asked, in practice, we're asked as we go throughout our day, beginning with those examples I gave, and, you know, they get more and more difficult usually as the day wears weirdly on, right? And so as we become reactive and catch ourselves, it's really, this is just a practice in becoming mindful and questioning, as the workbook says, all of you know, our judgments and our feelings and our sense of feeling unfairly treated and you know, the impulse that we have to associate that, to blame that on something outside ourselves, when really it's we have a choice, you know, of which teacher we want to look at it with. And you know, even if we can't choose to see peace right now, we can still remind ourselves that we could see peace. Maybe I can't right now, but I could see peace, you know. This is not the cause. I'm not upset for the reason I think, and I could see peace instead of this lesson 34. But, you know, I don't want to, but I could. Which lets us know that we have a choice. We are the decision-making mind. We are not these individual, you know, ill-treated personal selves.
Right. Well, and when you think about it, like even in this lesson, it said no one could solve all the problems the world appears to hold. And you can almost see yourself like a little gerbil or a little hamster on one of those wheels that, like you said, the ego, as long as we're willing to not look at the fact that there's only one problem and that problem never really existed, then we will just continue to make up the problems over and over and over and over and over and just go on the wheel forever and ever and ever. And when you all of a sudden see it that way, it's like, well, what if they're right? What if Jesus was right here, you know? And just like you said, who's likely to be right, me or him? But, you know, if I would just even, you know, like somewhere it says, if you could recognize that your only problem is separation, no matter what form it takes, then you could accept the answer because you'd see the relevance. And it's like, would you even for a minute entertain that maybe I'm not upset for the reason I think?
And it's,
you know,
it's really the entertaining of that possibility. And he says actually right in the very first paragraph that, let me just read the whole first paragraph. A problem can be solved if you do not know what it is. Even if it is really solved already, you will still have the problem because you will not recognize that it has been solved. This is the situation of the world. The problem of separation, which is really the only problem, has already been solved because it never happened. And he'll, you know, explain that later. But yet the solution is not recognized because the problem is not recognized. So, you know, the Course is all about getting us to question, to entertain the possibility that what we identify as the problem is not the problem.
Right.
And that opens us to the decision-making mind. That opens us to, and it's really the Course is all about getting us back to the decision-making mind. It's really not about, like, you know, asking Holy Spirit or Jesus to rescue us, you know, or to help me see this. I mean, we do say, help me see this differently. That's part of the process as we move up the ladder. But it's really over time empowering our decision-making mind. You know, again, through the practice, reminding us that we have a choice. You know, and I'm not Susan. I'm not the ego. I'm a mind, not a body. And I made a choice. I made a mistaken choice to believe an idea that never happened and all the possible consequences of that idea. But I was wrong, and I could choose again for the truth. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about, you know, it's again putting that decision back in the process. My awareness that I have a decision back in the process, and that comes from questioning what's my reactions. The validity of the cause of my reactions. And reminding myself I have a choice. I could see peace. Nothing outside my mind really has the power to take my peace away. That's an illusion. That's a story I taught myself. But it's not real. It's still a lie. You know, it's still a story.
Yeah. Well, and just it, like I said, the logic of this particular lesson, it's just pure genius. Yeah. You know, that the reason you don't find the solution is because you don't know what the problem is. And most of us, I mean, I just think on any given day, I can tell you what the problem is, Susan. You know, it's
right.
Because somebody left the toothpaste out, or, you know, the dogs did this or whatever. I mean, I can always argue for what I think the problem is. And what a stunning idea, though. You don't have the faintest idea what the problem is.
We
you know?
Yeah. And that's a wonderful reminder, too. I mean, really, it's that humility to question all our beliefs to, you know, I don't know what's going on. We were laughing when we first did, before this interview, when we first were talking, about how really that is that, you know, I think I said something like the only right-minded thing I've said this morning is that I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't have the faintest idea what's going on.
Right. That's truly a right-minded idea because we don't know what's going on. We think we're here.
Yeah.
Bodies. We think we're interacting with other bodies. We think, you know, there's all this drama going on. We think we're vulnerable. We think if we don't breathe, we can't survive, you know. And the Course is never asking us to deny that. That would be cruel. And, you know, bodies, as long as we think we're here, bad things can happen if we stop, if we try to hold our breath, you know,
mm-hmm.
If we try to stop interacting with other people who we, you know, I mean, that's what humans do. And that's actually the way that the Course is using now for us to learn what real love is. So we wouldn't want to take away, you know, we don't want to stop doing the normal things, but we need to recognize, you know, we have to start having the humility to say, my way isn't working. You know, if there's something else is going on here, and I want to know. I want to heal. I want to learn.
Yes.
You know? And he says, and your point about, so paragraph 2, everyone in this world seems to have his own special problems, yet they are all the same and must be recognized as one if the one solution that solves them all is to be accepted. From the Course's point of view, there's no hierarchy of illusions. You know, the cap on the toothpaste is no different than something, you know, something, someone in my personal life, a special relationship betraying me, or
mm-hmm.
Or something that, you know, something that horrible that happened to me as a child, or something, you know, the horrible thing that happened in Kenya yesterday. There's no difference from the Course's perspective because it's all a hateful thought that was put out there
right.
by the mind. And so, you know, this needs to apply. That doesn't mean that we should be insensitive to the fact that, or deny the fact that we do have a hierarchy of illusions, but that we should be practicing this and applying this in all circumstances, because that will lead us to seeing also that we're all the same, that victims and victimizers are suffering from the same deluded and very unkind thought system that I am, that, you know, we're all wounded, suffering, frightened children here and could not possibly be defending and attacking ourselves like this if we didn't think so, if we didn't
right.
be horribly guilty, you know?
Well, and in lesson 80, there's a sentence that's so simple that I love. It's one problem, one solution.
Yeah. I mean, the course is so simple. That's why it isn't hard in the sense of what am I supposed to do in this situation? When people first come to the course, they'll often, and for a while, you know, people will say in classes, well, what about this situation? They'll tell some kind of really sad, horrible story that's happening for them or that they heard about on the news or whatever. And you know, it's one problem, one solution. The answer is still the same. It doesn't mean that, you know, you might not be prompted to do something in form once you become right-minded. That would be, you know, to give money to a cause or to do something, to get a restraining order for someone who is being abusive. You know, that could be the most right-minded thing to do. But on the level of the mind, you want to be able to see that hatefulness is coming from the same hatefulness that's within me, you know,
right.
and that I will never be able to cover over all of my attempts to project it into a world and solve it there will never work until I take it back to the cause.
Absolutely.
And ask for, you know, again, choose again to see the cause as it is and not the way we set it up, the problem as it is, and not the way we set it up as the Course says. So it is very, the practice is so simple. And really, there's no reason why we can't do this practice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our feelings and our resistance and all of that, you can be experiencing those and still stepping back and not completely siding with them if you bring in that presence that never sides with them of Jesus, the Holy Spirit, that is the great comforter, you know. And we'll see us through our resistance and our disbelief. So there's another. So let's see what else is in this. So in paragraph 3, he says, "This is the position in which you find yourself now. You have the answer, but you are still uncertain about what the problem is. A long series of different problems seems to confront you, and as one is settled, the next one and the next arise. There seems to be no end to them. There is no time in which you feel completely free of problems and at peace." And then he goes on to say, "The temptation to regard problems as many is the temptation to keep the problem of separation unsolved." And so, you know, we're being led to really see that we have to apply this in all situations, without exception, as Ken always said, you know, and to ask for help with because we all have a hierarchy of illusions. We think the problems are different. We think that some are much more important than others. And you know, that's where we have to bring in that teacher, that inner teacher, to ask, you know, just to admit that we don't know. This is not the way I see it, but, you know, I could see peace, and I want to see it as you do. I want to grow up to be like you, you know. So and I just want to read one more thing in regard to that. "No one could solve all the problems the world appears to hold. They seem to be on so many levels, in such varying forms, and with such varied content that they confront you with an impossible situation. Some spring up unexpectedly, just as you think you have resolved the previous one. Others remain unsolved under a cloud of denial and rise to haunt you from time to time, only to be hidden again, but still unsolved." And I think we can all relate to this, right? I
mean, yes.
Like a jack in a box, right? You're just, or whack-a-mole.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
up, and then there's those others that, you know, we don't really want to deal with, and we don't know how to deal with, and they're sort of just nagging at the back of our consciousness, and we just think, you know, maybe they'll just go away, right?
Right.
And of course, they never do. They come back.
Well, yeah, and in fact, somewhere, I don't remember if it's 79 or 80, it says something like that. Like, it gets under a cloud of denial, but eventually it's just going to keep coming back up again.
Right, and I think I lose the world from all I thought it was, and he talks more about that. But, and he says, "All this complexity is but a desperate attempt not to recognize the problem, and therefore not to let it be resolved. If you could recognize that your only problem is separation, no matter what form it takes, you could accept the answer because you would see its relevance." perceiving its underlying, the underlying constancy in all the problems that seem to confront you, you would understand that you have the means, which is forgiveness, which is this practice of questioning what, you know, I'm not upset for the reason I think, I could see peace, of questioning the cause. We have the means to solve them all. And you would use the means because you recognize the problem. So he's working with us as our inner teacher to say, you know, let me show you, you know, open your mind to the possibility that I'm right and you're wrong. You know? Yeah. Let's, because you don't recognize this, but I do. And I can show you this in any given situation. If you are willing to make the new purpose of your life, you know, looking at your life as a classroom and whatever seems to come up, all the problems that seem to arise as your curriculum, and learning from me that they're all the same and have already been solved, that you know, that everyone is still loved and loving, that nothing has you know, anything has done can change God's love for you or anyone else in this situation. You know, that awareness is available to us in any given moment that we're willing to just step back and question, you know, our reactions.
Right. That was easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy because of our resistance. Mm-hmm. But it is the answer. And you know, again, Jesus isn't saying we don't have reactions. He's not saying we don't get angry. But it's the justifying of that is keeping us in hell. And we justify it by blaming it on something else. And that's why the guilt just keeps getting recycled, as you were kind of alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
You know? So we need to bring it to the light, and we can't do that by ourselves. But our part, our very small part, is to just say, you know, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about the what I'm pointing my finger at as the cause.
Right. And just always going back to lesson number 5.
Yep.
I'm never upset for the reason I think. I'll tell you, that is invaluable to me on a daily basis.
Yes, it is. I mean, that is a huge step. If we just entertain that possibility. And like I said, and add in, I could see peace. Just the could, because it's like, it puts me back in charge. I'm not a helpless victim here. I can stay here as long as I want. You know, Jesus doesn't care. He has infinite patience with us. You know, I still may want it's very helpful to recognize that I don't want to let go of my anger right now.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I really am enjoying it. It becomes less enjoyable over time because it's the pain of choosing, of recognizing that we're choosing, it just becomes pretty uncomfortable, you know. But if we want to stay there, we can.
Right.
You know, I mean, Ken used to jokingly say, I've heard him say, I'll wait in hell with you a while longer.
Oh.
And, you know, that kind of takes the
edge off of it, doesn't it?
Sales, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that is great. I love that. I'll stay in hell with you a while longer. Well, and on that note, we're getting really close to the end of the show.
Okay.
So maybe that's a good place to kind of leave it, is I love that statement a lot. But do you have any announcements you'd like to make today, Susan? And thank you so much for telling us about your new book.
Oh, thank you. That was just really something I was going to mention. But the other thing that I'd like to mention again is that, how valuable these classes at the foundation are. And if you haven't, and also there are some new, there's a couple of new CD sets that are on the foundation website of Ken's that are just, as always, wonderful. I don't know if they're still running the sale. I think they're not. So I shouldn't mention that they did a big sale. I don't know what they're doing in April, but I would recommend that people go to, if you're not familiar, or even if you are familiar with the Foundation for A Course in Miracles website, there is so much information on there. There are online learning tools that are just so, so valuable, including questions and answers that were done over quite a period of years to almost every question that students could come up possibly. I think probably every question students could possibly come up with that are just an amazing resource for all of us. There are the Lighthouse articles that Ken wrote over, I'm not sure how many years, but at least a decade. And all of those are so, they're free, they're invaluable resources, and as well as the bookstore where all of these CD sets are available. So, and check out the Temecula schedule page, which will, they're about to add, I think, soon new classes for the rest of the year on there. And there are a couple things currently still coming up there. But and I think they'll be doing more streaming at some point. They're looking at doing that and making it available again online. So use the resource. It's we're so lucky to have the generosity of everyone at the foundation and Ken and Gloria, who dedicated their lives to really bringing the clear message of the course as it was intended. By the scribes and by Helen and Bill, her collaborator, and I'm just so grateful, and I would very much encourage anyone else to avail themselves of those resources.
Okay, well, and thank you for that great reminder. And Susan, of course, is talking about the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which you can find at www.facim.org. And you can also find Susan on her blog at www.forays.com. And I'll make sure both of those are in the chat room today. But Susan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, C.A. It was a pleasure.
I really look forward to your new book. And thanks to all the listeners and to everybody in the chat room who participated that way. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And you can remember, you can always find me on 12listen.com. You can also find me on my other radio show on Tuesdays. And you can find the Course in Miracles, both as you can find them on 12radio. You can listen to the lesson of the day. You can also find the lesson of the day actually on the website at 12listen.com under the scope section. So I hope you'll check that out. And for right now, I hope you'll stay tuned to 12radio. You've got about 5 minutes before Christine Dumaurier is here with her show, The Through Line. And then, of course, she is followed by a lineup of wonderful live programming here on Fridays on 12radio. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, with my guest, Susan Dugan, on 12radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.